You are now entering Zone 4. Please be seated and prepare to experience the nerd aristocracy. Any offences encountered by today's broadcast will not be the responsibility of the Mars Sivex Consolidated Drilling Corporation or its subsidiaries.
Welcome to the Nerd Aristocracy, the podcast for all fans nerd. Available worldwide at nerdaristocracy.com. The leaders of the nerd proletariat, your esteemed hosts, Jonathan Dell and Ryan Reinecke.
That's us.
That's me and you.
That is you and I, or you and me.
Yeah, I was going to be more selfish about it.
Which one is it? Is it you and I or you and me?
Politely, it's you and I. Yeah.
Politely. So if you want to be a dick, it's you and me.
Me, and you can tag along for this one.
Okay, that's cool. That's cool. So what's going on? What's happening?
Ah, heck. Not a whole heck of a lot. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you later. Go find interesting. What a way to build it up, huh?
It's been the Nerd Aristocracy.
The most interesting thing is that the Nerd Aristocracy was hacked.
Was it?
It was. .com, where you can reach us online if you're not going through iTunes. Apparently last Friday, between the hours of 5 and 8:30 Central Standard Time, close to 5, we were hacked, where anybody that would go to our site would see what I call a penis stamp, basically the equivalent of a hacker peeing on your lawn just to mark their territory.
So it's kind of like a tag.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, it was a tag, and it was kind of like this fist with like a circle around it on black. And it was like, this site has been hacked by Mr. Venus and somebody else. So the guy goes by the moniker Mr. Venus, which is interesting. I don't know if he realizes that makes him sound like a transvestite, because like Venus is, you know, typically the goddess of love and stuff. Or maybe he thinks that he's really good with ladies. I don't know. If he's a hacker, probably not. But I'm probably just inviting more technological pain on us for smarting off.
Sure.
But the damage was quite minimal. Basically, it was like an insertion of this splash page, and there's no way you could access our site. And I got on, and within about half an hour, I had everything running back up and started spending the next day and a half like really locking the site down and doing the best I could, my due diligence. And I have a friend, Methun, that's a red hat, what they call red hats, up in North Carolina. And do you know that term, red hat?
Methun?
Yeah. I'm serious.
I don't know the term red hat.
Okay. Do you know Methun?
I know him through Facebook.
Do you now?
I do.
Yeah. He's my Indian friend, a brilliant dude.
You have one Indian friend.
I do. Okay. I do have one Indian friend.
Okay.
One can never have enough, in my
opinion. That's what Mama used to say.
Yeah, I know his house always smelled better than mine, too.
That's true.
Like, my mom never cooked anything that wasn't frozen first.
Right.
And his mom cooked everything from scratch. Anyway, contacted him on the Facebook. I was like, oh, please help me. And he was kind of like, well, you know, here's like half a dozen websites that tell you how to secure your WordPress blog. You probably should have done that in advance.
So a red hat is basically...
Oh, yeah. My bad. Yeah, there are black hats, white hats, and red hats. Okay?
Okay. I'm writing this down.
You should. You're just drawing smiley faces. Penises on the heads. A black hat is like a hacker that is just out to do ill. All right, they're the dark side of the force.
Sure.
The white hats are on the good side of the force.
Okay.
I honestly don't know a good white hat comparison. Maybe the group Anonymous would be white hats, but I don't think so, because, I mean, they do hacky stuff.
So you're saying it would not, like the Rebel Alliance would not be white hats?
Yeah, that's a very good analogy. Okay. Yeah, the Rebel Alliance would be the white hats. The Empire would be the black hats.
Sure.
And the red hats would be white hats that are employed by a corporation to protect their systems, basically. So he gets Fat Bank to take care of some corporation to make sure that all their systems run well and they don't get hacked.
So like Bubba Fat. essentially.
Fat. He's not Bubba Fat. That dude is pretty lean, actually. Come on.
He's pretty.
His son looked like a porker. no, actually, when he was young, because that was Bubba Fat when he was young.
Sure.
He went through a little awkward chubby phase.
Yes, yes,
until
he
did. His dad was probably, Django was probably like, look, son, you're never going to get up on that rocket unless you lose a couple of space pounds.
But yes, so it's like a mercenary, essentially.
Yeah, Han Solo would be the Red Hats.
Okay.
Perhaps, yeah.
Sure.
Because Boba Fett was, you know, working for the bad guys.
Well, yeah, but, you know.
Yeah.
So you're saying a Red Hat wouldn't work for the Black Hats. The Red Hats don't go either, both ways. The Red Hats are...
They're white hats that work for a company or for a cause or for a corporation. Black Hats just work for themselves.
So Red Hats are gainfully employed.
Correct. Correct. So, and so Black Hats may be gainfully
employed. So like the fact they get paid for
defrauding.
It. Right.
They're legal.
Okay. You know,
they're above board.
Okay.
But they're not like independents, I guess, like the White Hats.
Right.
Gave me a couple of pointers to go to, and I mean, shame on me, I didn't have the WordPress blog updated. I mean, the engine that runs it to its latest release, because I was like, oh, what's the big deal? What's it matter? Apparently, it matters if your fucking site goes down, which ours did. So anyway, with the limited knowledge that I had, I started going through our logs online. Stop yawning, dude. That's all you do when I talk is, like, you yawn and, like, fucking pick your ass. sometimes both at once. To see, because you know what an IP is, right?
I do.
Internet Protocol Address, like 67 point blah, 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 blah.
Sure.
And that tells you where a signal originates from. And I was able to go through the logs and cut out the time span that I knew this had to occur in. And so then I started focusing on the IP addresses that visited our website. And then from there, I put my fucking nerd hat on.
And then I'm proud of you because I have no clue what the fuck you're talking about.
That's good. There's two people out there that do, and okay. I'm one of them.
I appreciate it. I can respect that.
I can
respect that. God, I'm thankful that we have someone on the Nerd Aristocracy that does know about this shit, because if it was me, it'd still be down. And
we would be just selling cassettes on the street if neither one of us knew how to put it online. We'd be like, oh, well, find your 8-track and put this in there. It's pretty funny.
Slide this in between your Garth Brooks album and your Whitney Houston cassette.
When you take out your Simon and Garfunkel, you might want to listen to this. I went through and was able to kind of focus in on where the addresses came from by plugging in those IPs online that will tell you the country and areas of origin from them, and, you know, focused out the United States one. And basically it came down to Syria, Belarus, and the Russian Federation.
Okay.
So there were three guys, I think, that were working on this, and what got me is that they both had like Windows NT systems, because it tells you the system that somebody's using to talk to you, which is pretty cool. But I mean, they're using a fucking system that's Windows NT. I don't even know when that came out. That was like the mid-90s, maybe, something like that. But I was
so they're hacking us with like a 286.
Yeah, they're like stealing our Porsche with a fucking can opener, pretty much. yeah, with a 286 and. Maybe rocking half a gig of RAM. Oh, God. And so it's just ironic that we're the Nerd Aristocracy, but we got so fucking served like that. Right. Anyway, Mr. Venus left with his penis stamp his Hotmail address, which is also kind of funny in a different way. And I wrote him back, and I asked him if he would be a guest on our show. So we might have that in the future. He's not responded yet. And I also sent it in Arabic, too, to be, you know, like, hey, you know, well done. You know, now come out and like, let's talk about this, because I think we can have some fun. Because from my understanding, Syria is, like, in some shit right now. Like, the whole Libya, fucking Egypt stuff, Syria's kind of getting to a rolling boil. Like, don't you have more productive shit to do?
Sure.
Than fuck with some, like, American dudes that are fairly pretty cool, I think.
Right.
You know, it's not like we got, like, a Bob's Hunting website or something like
that. Yeah, or, like, fuck Syria, you know? It's not fucksyria.com.
Yeah, no, it's not like Nerd Aristocracy hates fucking Syrians.
Right.
And they're transvestites that go by the name of Mr. Venus. So,
be sure you visit nerdaristocracy.com sometime in the next 45 minutes.
Why don't I take a screenshot while you can, because we won't be on for much longer. But no, hopefully, you know, he's got a good sense of humor. I don't know. Not too much terrible damage was done, thankfully for that. So we were able to get back online. So that was fun. That was something unique.
Sure.
Yeah. You don't know that sinking feeling where you're like, oh no. All the people that go to our website are going to see this.
Right. So what else did you do this weekend other than save nerdaristocracy.com?
Crickets. And that's about it.
Crickets.
Yeah, okay. That's about it.
That's cool. I can respect that. Didn't you do some roller derby stuff on Saturday night? Or?
Oh, yeah. There's a roller derby party, a Relay for Life that they had where they're helping out a charity, American Cancer Society, and they raised like $1,800 for the American Cancer Society. They had some bands play in Ocean Springs, and that was all right. I wasn't really involved up in it, aside from just drinking, and I did smuggle in my own booze.
That is typically my preferred level of involvement mm-hmm. in most things.
Showing up and drinking?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's pretty much my contribution to a lot of events.
Yeah, that's my take on parenthood, kind of. It's right. Like, hey, I'm here, right?
Right. Past and being present is really 90% of parenting, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, being accessible, I think.
Sure.
Yeah, and communicating.
I mean, your actual parenting techniques are really inconsequential, I think, over the course of your child's lifetime.
Yeah, it's all relative.
I think Dr. Spock really said that, you know. He said it. You don't have to treat your kids well or educate them or, you know, feed them or anything like that. It, just as long as you're there.
Are you talking about Star Trek, Dr. Spock?
No, I'm talking about the infamous child psychologist.
That was a woman?
Was it?
Mm-hmm. Jonathan got something wrong. Click! Oh!
Right.
11 minutes and 45 seconds into the podcast.
That's all right. That's all right. You know why I don't know that? Because I don't have any kids.
I never read anything about raising a child. It's just one of those things you have to get into and do. Like operating a bulldozer. You can't read about it. You can't have people tell you about it.
Right.
You just got to do it. Mm-hmm. And that's how we're doing it.
Okay.
Get her done. Getting her done.
Well, at age 18, mm-hmm. I'll let you know how you did with your child.
As you're raping her?
No, I was going to say.
You're going to do an assessment on her?
See if she decides
No matter who you are, how you're raised up, you'll have something to bitch about and complain about. You know?
Sure.
Either it's, they weren't there, or oh, they were overbearing, you know?
Yes.
Daddy drank, or oh, he was a hard-assed person who was miserable in his life.
Yes.
So, you know, I think it all comes out in the wash, you know?
I would agree.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree. Well, good. I'm glad you had a productive and happy weekend.
Yeah, I did get to play with the Nintendo 3DS. Okay. I'll go ahead and lay that on the table. Nintendo 3DS is their portable game system. It's in 3D where you do not need to wear glasses.
That's true.
It does an interesting thing that plays to both of your eyes. Now, my first reactions to this were, one, lawsuit coming.
Sure.
Down the pipes. Class action, I'm thinking. A bunch of blind children.
Yes.
That's going to happen.
What was the Nintendo?
Now, they put out a big warning like, hey, 3D for kids younger than 6 or 7, that's a no-no. So they kind of already put that out there to get them out of jail. But
sure.
I think your eyes are developing and shit probably well until you're like 10 or 12 at least.
Yeah. What was that freaking I think Nintendo put it out probably 19 years ago. It was like all red and you put it on your head and it was like, you know, 3D, or it was supposed to be 3D, but all it really was a crappy 2D red screen or, you know, green screen that you put like
Virtual Boy
an inch from your eyeball.
Yeah, the Virtual Boy, baby.
Yes.
That was fucking pretty sweet for the day. But I mean, it's like one of those things that was good, but not ready to come out of the oven and be served to people. That's why I didn't catch on. This whole 3D craze, I kind of feel a similar thing, especially with the TVs. It's like, hey, we're going to watch Avatar tonight. Bring over your $200 glasses. You know, because the fucking glasses for those things cost $200 a pop.
Really?
Yeah. And you're not just going to have a fucking wall full of them. Oh, go ahead and pick whatever glasses you
want
to uncomfortably wear for 2 hours while we talk to each other. And if you turn your head to talk to me, it might disconnect from the TV and just stop working.
Yeah, like, I mean, unless I had a screen the size of, like, a wall in one of my rooms, I don't think I would invest that much money in it.
Yeah, because, unless I had a budget the size.
The 3D experience is only fun when it's, you know, massive, when you're either in a movie theater or, you know, something to that effect.
Or strictly in, like, a darkened cave.
Sure.
Something like that. I mean, you can get, I mean, your TV can be a big screen TV if you put a chair right in front of it.
Absolutely.
You know, all my TVs when I was young were fucking wall to wall because my nose is humping the glass.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you had to see the flying turtles and stuff like that.
No, just to make anything through the squiggles of the Skinemax between channel 14 and 15. You got a whole dial right there.
Yeah, I remember.
Fuck paying $20 a month, dude.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm familiar.
So, and there was one quite interesting thing with the 3DS that I didn't know about until I saw it. They're called AR cards. And what they are is it's the size of a playing card, shrunk down a little bit. And it has a symbol on it. Like, this one was a blocky question mark from the Mario 8-bit games. And you would put it on a table, and you would point the 3DS cameras at it that face front, because it's got two cameras, so it can do a 3D stereoscopic thing. So you can take 3D pictures, too. Like, I could take a photograph of you, and it'd be a 3D picture. That's kind of cool. But you'd focus it on this card. It would align itself and calibrate to that card that's on your table. And then all of a sudden on the screen, you're seeing your table with the card on it. And then out from the table pops out like a little box. And you can play games that are overlaid on your table. Do you understand what I'm saying?
No, I do not.
Imagine you're looking through a little window.
I am looking through a little window right now.
Okay, and through this little window, there's like Mario breakdancing right here.
Okay.
And then you move this away and there's no Mario breakdancing. There's just a card on the table.
Right.
But when you're looking through the screen, it superimposes Mario in 3D on that card.
Interesting.
It's pretty sweet. And so you're moving around it because things are coming at you and stuff, and you're shooting at it. And the card will start wavering up and down on the screen, and it uses the texture of your table, and it maps it, and it starts like warping your table and stuff through the screen. So that was quite neat. And from that, I see a lot of people walking in front of buses. So there's going to be in New York, Chicago, where they would have transit systems. They're going to be people that fucking die because they're shooting dragons that just aren't there. And it's like that kind of realization I had when people started using the Bluetooths that came out, when you're just like, is that a well-dressed homeless person that's just like talking to himself?
Sure.
Or people rocking emphatically talking on Bluetooth. And it's like, no, they're not insane. They just got like a little thing in their ear and they're talking to somebody that's not there. Similarly, people are going to be playing with things that aren't there too, because they're going to be just like seeing it on the screen and it's not really there in reality.
Right.
Which we need. People, they're too well connected these days. They communicate too honestly. So we need a little buffer between, you and the other person.
Yes.
Gotta get rid of that pesky human connection. So that was cool.
Sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's my Nintendo 3DS review.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. I'll try it out in like 10 years.
You should.
Because I'm always like a cycle behind on technology.
I enjoy doing that myself.
People get a smartphone, and then like 5 years later, I'll get a smartphone, and I'll be like, hey, I got a smartphone. And people are like, oh, that's nice, Jonathan.
Well, the trick is not to be excited about it when you get it. I mean, yourself, you can be giddy, but don't let other people see that, because then they'll be like, oh, you finally got to the party.
Sure.
Yeah. I'll
probably get an MP3 player this year.
Uh-huh.
And then...
Why would you do that?
In like 5 years, I'll probably step up to an iPhone.
Okay.
At some point.
But see, then you get in when the technology's kind of settled and kind of gone through all this buggy phase.
That's what I tell people, you know? I'm like, oh, well, there's probably still bugs and, you know, the Super Nintendo. So
holding out on that.
I'm holding out until
it's Neo Geo. I want to see that develop a little more.
I'm waiting until they iron out all the kinks in Sega Channel before I can.
But I'm jazzed. I mean, you know, the PS3 I just got, I'm fucking excited as shit about that. And that came out years ago, you know?
You know, it's mine has served me well. Yeah. You know, so we'll see what happens. Well, this weekend I went to Hubfest.
Humpfest?
Well, I went there too, but first...
What's the price of admission on that?
Oh, shit. No, Hubfest, a festival
of hubs, of, obviously.
Of in the hub city. And it had, you know, the typical fair, food,
rides,
and
donkeys.
No, I meant the typical fair, as in it had food. And it had,
not like a country fair, right. Like Guess the Weight of the Clown or.
Yeah.
Okay.
Didn't have a dunking booth, but okay. It had, you know, food booths and artists and stuff like that.
Okay. Okay.
Artists in quotation marks.
Right.
And then had some music. It was interesting. It was nice.
Okay, that's very reserved kind of judgment. It's like it was good.
Well, you know,
it was what it was.
Yes. I mean,
jacking off by myself for 4 hours on meth, yeah, probably better.
I mean the company was good, but you know, I've been to, I mean, having lived in New Orleans for 10 years, I'm pretty...
You're burned out. That part of your cerebral cortex just melted.
Well, it takes a pretty high-level festival to really, you know...
Right.
Get me going.
Your synapses, you know, are kind of fried.
Exactly.
From, like, the good times.
Sure.
In the past. Yeah. It's like anybody that does, like, a lot of drugs, it's hard to hit that high again.
Right. I mean, between the French Quarter festivals and the jazz festivals and the...
And Thursdays.
And the Greek festivals. Right. And, you know, I mean, there's literally... And especially Essence Festival. That is
a fun time, yes, to be around.
Yes.
Yeah, it is. Like, it's like, am I going to make it out alive?
Right. So, no. You know, it was a good time. Had a great weekend. You know, did the quality time thing. So it was good. And then, you know, return back to the real world this week. And then next week I go to Vegas to tell some jokey jokes.
Going to Vegas.
Going to be for our... One Vegas listener.
Mm-hmm. Bill?
I don't know. I'm sure somebody out west probably.
Well, are you going to give a shout out to the show when you're out there?
Stumbled upon us. I'm sure I'll send a shout out or two.
You better. Come on, dude.
Yeah, well, we could do the show next week from afar if we had figured out the fucking Skype situation yet. But
yeah, but I mean, beyond like 10 minutes of doing that would just be annoying.
Okay.
I think.
Duly noted.
So you're leaving here Monday, Tuesday?
I'm flying out on Tuesday, performing Tuesday night through Sunday night.
Wow. How many shows?
Two shows a night.
Fuck you, dude.
Yeah.
Right on.
So lots
congratulations.
Of, lots of...
Let's see.
No, gonna be...
Dick.
Yeah. No, lots of jokes. So that's
a lot
gonna
of
be...
funny.
That's gonna be good to get back on stage in a respectable house of...
So
comedy.
What's the venue again?
It is the Improv at Harrah's on the Strip. So, the Improv in Las Vegas.
Man, baby, if I had money, I would so go there.
That is cool.
And gamble a lot.
Yes.
Catch your show a couple of times.
Yep.
Yeah.
No.
That's fantastic. So, where are you going to be staying?
They put me up there at Harrah's.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have like a comp list? Can you get people in?
I can.
Well, how about this for our listeners? What if, you know, the first three people that write in to mail@nerdaristocracy.com will get you on the comp list to see Mr. Jonathan Bell.
That is it. Our listeners are always welcome to pay full admission to be on my comp list for any shows.
Excellent.
I say that now while we have 10 listeners.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
Hopefully in the future we'll have more than 100 that.
100 listeners. Come on, man.
Okay. While we have 100 listeners, the offer is still
there. Meriwether can come there. She only lives like an hour and a half away.
About 5 hours. But,
oh, really?
Yes. But
look
she...
at the map again.
Right. But she is... not going to be able to join us because this is like the hell week.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that either. I mean, it's 5 hours.
Yeah. No, I'm totally not worth driving
well,
5 hours.
5 hours. Gas these days.
But no, it's going to be fun. I always have a great time.
Yeah.
Get to go play rock star for a week and, you know, tell some jokes and make a little bread and That's it.
Can I have you bring something back for me? I hear they have it in abundance in Vegas. Our little, like, call girl or prostitute cards that they hand out.
Yes.
And they're just supposed to, like, litter the streets with them.
They do.
My wife went out there for some derby thing a year or so ago, and she was like, just, like, they were all over the place.
Yes.
Handed out by people that can't speak two scraps of Mexican.
That's true.
So, yeah, that'd be cool. I'd like to see some of those.
Okay.
It'd be fun to play around with.
I will bring you back. I'm making a note. Bring back...
girly cards.
Hooker cards for Ryan. And of course what's going to happen is...
you're going to bring back a hooker.
No. I'm going to get home. I'm going to like open up my suitcase. And my girlfriend is going to come over and honey? she's gonna see 500 hooker cards in my suitcase.
It's for Ryan, I swear. But you look, you have this archive right here.
She's going to be like, what the hell is this?
To prove your innocence.
There you go.
$5.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that should be fun. Looking forward to doing that and making it rain.
Making it rain?
Yeah.
Is that a term?
I think so.
Like... in the desert? Like, is that a biblical thing?
No, it means making lots of money.
Oh, okay. Sure, sure. Making it rain?
Yes.
All right.
You know, it comes from the... its origins are in the strip club when you throw money on the stage.
Okay.
And then the money falls down like rain.
Because strippers love when you throw a bunch of fucking quarters at
them. Yes, they do.
Here, don't get bruised, bitch.
And then it has for change back. Typically a good policy.
And nickel back in that quarter.
I just wanted to tip 20 cents. But no, that's pretty cool. And
that's fantastic. Congratulations.
Also been working very heavily on the video for friend of the show, Jesse Merriweather.
Mm-hmm.
Going to be doing the comedy video in reply to her comedy video. So maybe... we should be done by the time this episode hits the web.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we can link to both videos.
Yeah, absolutely. I like the Oliver Stone approach that you took to the crafting of this.
Yes.
Where you're like, fuck it, cost is no expense.
Right.
You know, let's load up 8 mini DVs.
That's
so we got
it.
8 hours of footage.
Yes.
And you're shaving it down to a good 2 hours.
Yes. It's going to be a 2-hour YouTube clip.
In 8 parts.
It's called Johnny Cage. It's going to actually be called Johnny Cage. Johnny Cage's date with Lizzie. It's going to be a 3-hour motion picture.
Nice. It's an epic. It's like a miniseries.
It is.
I like that.
It's like Lonesome Dove Revisited.
So, yeah, that's good. I need to cut one of those, too. I'm still kind of coming up with some ideas for
you
it.
You do. I know Jesse is very anxious to see what you can come up with as well.
Yeah, me too.
So we will get that together. So next week, you're going to be, I guess we're going to be without a show, I guess.
Yeah.
Since I'm going to be out of town. And
it's going to be a down week.
It is.
Yeah. Which will be good, I guess. I mean, create a little more want in our listenership.
Sure, we'll have to come back strong that following week.
We will. Well, I mean, you'll have a whole wealth of stories.
I will.
You know, I can just sit there and kind of, you know, coax stuff out of you from the week before.
That's true.
Unless you're like, I just went to Vegas, man. What am I fucking around with you in this microphone for?
Yes. Yes, because my 2 trips a year to Vegas make me holier than thou.
You just won't return my calls. Sorry, do I know you? Here's my agent's phone number.
That's it. So a friend of the show, James Stevenson, let us know via our Facebook page that we had made 2 mistakes last week, one which we already addressed. But a friend of the show, James, said he loves the show. We make him laugh. Mm-hmm. We have good rapport. But we were wrong about Brad and Angelina and their natural born children.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently the article we covered intently last week about Pi was a hoax.
Yeah, yeah. I did actually put that in the show notes. That it's like satire so good as to be believable.
But it was a solid bit. We riffed on that for about 5 or 10 minutes.
So. I know. But see, the thing about us getting things wrong is that we do it with such hypervigilance
sure.
that we we will turn it into a flower on its own. And so good stuff comes out of that falsehood.
That is true. That is true.
So it doesn't, the truth is, you know, elastic at best.
So lots of stuff on the telly. I was referred, I guess. Is that what happens when somebody sends you an internet video? What's the word there?
Forwards.
I was forwarded. I was instructed. I was recommended to watch.
I don't know. Did they put the video in the email to you?
They did not. They spoke about the video, and then I asked them about the video, and then they told me about it.
Then they forwarded a suggestion to you.
But originally I had missed it, believe it or not. But Comedy Central did a tribute to comedian Greg Giraldo that passed away from an overdose. And they did like this little tribute to him, but it was so touching. Like it was done so well. It was done documentary style, and they interviewed comics and everyone from, you know, Sarah Silverman to Jeffrey Ross to Nick Schwartz and Bob Saget, John Stewart, Dennis Leary, like tons of A-list comics came out and were interviewed for this. And like I say, it was very documentary style. The music was very touching, very slow. Had a lot of Greg's well-known bits in it. And it was done really, really well. And I think a lot of the comics that were interviewed and made the final cut made some really good points just about how, you know, so many times now the layperson, you know, the fan of comedy, they don't really know, I guess, the peaks and valleys of being a comedian, if that makes any sense.
No, absolutely.
You know, people see a comic's life and
oh, you're a clown, every day is a parade.
Sure, you know, they see the Comedy Central specials, and they see the HBO specials, and they see the roasts, and they don't see the aspect of the business that either A, it took to get there, or B, what it takes to stay there. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't see the being without your family 50 weeks a year.
Yeah, sacrifice the work.
You know, staying in a shitty Motel 6 for 23 hours a day and then going and performing and being the center of attention and being high on life for an hour and then going back to your shitty Motel 6 room alone, broke, hungry, you know. And there's a reason why comics tend to gravitate to the dark side and you know, to substance abuse, is because there's a lot of shit mentally that you're not really prepared to deal with on the in the ups and downs.
Yeah, as you show me one of those clips where Greg himself was talking about that, like, why do I go out and drink all the time? It's because I have to filter this and I have to deal with this. This is medicine for me to, you know, deal with this lifestyle.
Yeah.
And who was that one comedian that was, like, losing his ass? I mean, visually he was familiar to me, but I don't know his name. The guy that was, like, crying and stuff.
Oh, Nick Schwartzen.
Yeah, okay, Nick Schwartzen. He pointed out, you know, like, this is a unique existence. You
sure.
know? And that goes with what you were saying, is that, you know, people don't realize, you know, when the footlights go off and you go home, and you're not even going home. You're going to some like rented crappy place that you're just in this stasis until you become alive again.
Yeah. And it really does take another comic to be able to understand that, just because, you know, I, as a stand-up comedian, if I complain to, you know, a bricklayer about how shitty the life of a stand-up comic is, he's going to tell me to go fuck myself, you know? Because all he sees is, wait, hold on. You get paid to go out and tell jokes for an hour and then drink, and then that's it? That's all you got to do? Mm-hmm. And on one hand, yeah, that's the main element of the gig. I mean, that's the main element of the job. That's what defines it as being a stand-up comedian occupation. But there's the other stuff that comes along with that, you know? It's the driving 12 hours to do a gig that you're breaking even on money with, and you have, 10 people in the audience watching you, three are asleep, four are heckling, and the other three are sitting at the bar with their back to you, you know, all ungrateful, all don't know that you just drove 12 hours to entertain them and breaking even money. Mm-hmm. They probably didn't pay anything to get in. And you know that, they know that, you know, and there's this bitter, cantankerous, you know, atmosphere. And then you go back to your hotel room and you say, why the fuck do I do this?
This sounds so romantic. How can I get started?
Right?
Yeah.
And then the next day, you have a killer show, you have a great show, and then you say, that's why I do this. I am reminded.
Right, right.
And then it's another 3 weeks of shitty redneck hillbillies, you know, and juke joints and one-nighters in towns you would never wish to return.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
just padding for the next...
Right, exactly. And that's what it is. It's just the highlight gigs. You know, you have three or four gigs a year where you say, okay, this is why I do this. This is the good shit.
I don't know. From what I hear, I think I understand the bricklayers have quite a fucking time, too, after they slap down those bricks.
That's true.
They break it out.
I can only imagine. But yeah, the documentary is called Give It Up for Greg Giraldo. It's four parts on YouTube. So yeah,
produced by Comedy Central, right?
Yes. So if you want to watch it for free, no commercials, go to YouTube and... search Give It Up for Greg Giraldo, and that's G-I-R-A-L-D-O. Greg was a nice guy, man. Met him one time. Never got the opportunity to work with him or open for him, but met him one time, and he was a really nice dude.
Did you meet him in passing? Did you get to hang with him for any amount of time?
Briefly.
Right.
You know. He was just about to go on, so it was like, I don't know, 5-10 minutes probably. And it was a group. It wasn't a one-on-one thing. You know, right. There were like five or six comics there. But cool guy, and he'll definitely be missed because he did have a definite unique...
Yeah, I'd like to watch the rest of that. I mean, from what you showed me, I've never seen so many splendid comedians be so straight and
sure.
serious. And
yeah.
I think it's the only time I've seen Sarah Silverman not be a fucking goofbag.
Right.
I mean, I love her. I love the shit she does.
But sure.
I mean, I didn't think she could be serious, you mm-hmm. know, but to see that gravity in her is like really like, holy shit, wow, okay.
Yeah.
You know, to see that somebody had touched these many people.
Yeah, it's it was a very well-produced documentary, and I think it honored him very well. So they did a great job. Props to the producers on that. while we're on the topic of stand-up comedy documentaries, I don't know if I've mentioned it before, but a couple of months ago, I watched a documentary that probably gave the best overall snapshot as to what being a comedian is all about and why they do it. And it's called I Am Comic. I know you've seen it.
Yeah, you told me about that, I think off the air, maybe.
Yeah. So
it was great. That was...
Yeah.
Splendid, dude.
Yeah, it was. It's a good documentary as well. You can Netflix that. I think it's on streaming, if I'm not mistaken,
yeah,
on Netflix streaming. So our listeners, if they're remotely interested in stand-up comedy or even if they're not, I think it's just a well-made documentary.
Just watch it.
Just watch it.
All right.
I Am Comic.
Yeah, I started watching it because I was like, oh, yeah, Jonathan told me about this. And seriously, I was like, one of those things, like, oh, I'll watch the intro. And an hour and a half later, I was like, oh, shit, that was awesome. You know, I totally got lost in it.
And you know what? I missed Norm MacDonald's special this past weekend because I was doing the Hubfest thing. So I missed Norm's new special, Me Doing Stand-Up. Is the name
right.
of it. So I need to find that somewhere online, or I need to find that somewhere else. But did you want to take a break now and hit it hard when we come back?
Let's do that. That's a good stopping point here. Let's round out, and we'll be back in just a few seconds, folks.
Stick with us.
You are now entering Zone 4. Please be seated and prepare to experience the Nerd Aristocracy. Your hosts for today's session are Jonathan Bell and Ryan Reinicke.
And welcome back to the Nerd Aristocracy. We hope you're refreshed. Are you refreshed?
I'm very refreshed. I'm
refreshed and ready to dress.
My smoky treat. I got my Powerade.
Yeah, I got a little smoky treat from you. I got a couple of bumps of my my snuff in me,
that's true.
Which is nice and mentholated. Have you heard of Thomas Jefferson's Bible?
I have.
You have?
I have.
Are you aware of the nature of it, that is a cut-and-paste Bible? That he basically went through the Bible, cut it up with a razor, and took the parts out that he thought was salient to the philosophy that was worth holding on to?
I did.
Yeah, it's 85 pages long. That sounds like my kind of Bible. And I like that. I like that. Okay, this is a book. You know, let me take it as a book and not the book. And that I can pull the useful parts out of it for myself and, you know, my code of morality and be just fine with that. And it's interesting that, well, and not surprising that people would have a huge problem with that, that hold that book is, you know, every word and letter is sacred. And I think that that's kind of in line with my philosophies, I think. And I don't have any specific doctrine that I follow. I certainly don't go to church if I can avoid it. But I like that taking from different religions to kind of cobble together your own,
sure,
your own code, not to justify, you know, any moral lacking you might have, but just be able to differentiate, what is built up fairy tale and what is, you know, really true golden, you know, wisdom.
No, I mean, I completely agree. I think for myself, I define my spirituality as more of a thought process than a religion per se. But yeah, I think Thomas Jefferson was pretty well known amongst the founding fathers for being of a high moral character.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if his Bible per se. I guess nowadays it's more of, it would be like highlighted portions,
yeah,
versus
kind of the Cliff Notes.
Sure. I from what I've read, I don't think his intent was to say, okay, I am editing the Bible and we'll put my final product out there for other people. I think it was more of a, like as you said, these are the parts that I feel are talk to me directly,
right,
and affect me in a religious and or moral way, and so this is what, you know, this is what I'll keen in on, if you will.
Yeah, more personal and less religious worship by census.
Sure.
Which, you know, I think is the root of spirituality is, you know, the individual and your connection with,
right,
the great beyond.
Sure. And it's ironic that you bring this up. I didn't know you were going to talk about it because, yeah, I was talking to my girlfriend about this the other night, and it's almost as if, I think everybody interprets the Bible or any religious text differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as I told her, I think there are no two theologies the same. I think they're all like fingerprints. Everybody's is different.
Right.
You know, even, and as far as, you know, you talking about the Bible being edited, it's changed a lot over, you know,
oh, yeah,
2,000 plus years.
Council of Nicaea.
Yeah, exactly.
1400s.
Right. You know, what we currently know as the Bible is not what the Bible was,
no,
when it was first culminated. So, you know, I guess it's just an interesting.
Well, I think all theologies obviously are different, but I think they all share, you know, if you boiled it down, you know, if they were all different broths and you boiled them down, you'd be, there'd be very little difference in between what remained, you know, the core of the philosophy.
I mean, I've read several books on the fact that the narratives of the four major religious texts are all pretty, you know, pretty dadgum similar. I mean, down to the ins and outs of the, I don't want to say main character, but
the protagonist.
Yeah, right. The protagonist of the narrative, the religion's rock star, whoever that may be, even his personal journeys had very similar, 40 days, 40 nights, trips through desert, saving of the people, conducting miracles. It's almost like you say, it's almost as if they were reduced from the same sauce to have a culinary reference.
That kind of goes with what I saw earlier today before I came in. I can't locate it right now online. I saw on Yahoo News linked to it. And some plates, copper engraved plates bound with wires about the size of credit cards. The pages were, this little booklet was found in a cave in Jordan like 5 years ago or something like that. And it has like some of the earliest testimonies of the Christian people in about the year 30.
Right.
This they've carbon dated it too, and they found that it's true, and it hasn't gotten a lot of hoopla because they hadn't been able to verify its age until recently with carbon dating, and judging by the how it's decomposed, they are now pretty certain that this is true and this is real. So I'd really be anxious. I'm always interested to see the old shit, closer to the generation of particular religions. Like, right. What was there before people started editing it and putting in their footnotes and interpreting it and stuff like that? Like, what did the original people, when the shit went down, put down and take out of it?
Sure. And that's what I told Danielle, was like, I take more stock in, with regards to specifically the Christian theology, I think that I take more stock in what Jesus did as opposed to what words were attributed to him, because I think it's easier to change words, to change, to attribute speech to someone than it is to change accounts of their actions. I think a lot of times the two are not necessarily, the two don't always run parallel in Jesus's case.
Right.
There's many accounts of him talking with thieves and hookers and, women of the night and the poor and the derelicts and the dregs of society, whereas words that are attributed to him often, I'm not going to say don't coalesce or don't coincide with his actions, but I think somewhere along the way, church leaders, piped a little bit of Jesus talk in there that personally to me don't sound like they were specifically, from the Word of God.
Right. Well, that's what bothers me, is when people will twist that to their own agendas or their own fears.
Sure.
And, what would Jesus do?
Well, the Catholic Church would never do that.
No. I mean, no true religion would, right? Using anything to their agenda, like, oh, let's go kill all those other people because they don't happen to pay me tax right now. That reminds me of a podcast series that I'm going to recommend that you can find through iTunes. If you just get in the iTunes store and you search for Historical Jesus, it's a class from Stanford University in the education department of the iTunes podcast, and it's a lecture given over, I guess, a 9-week course, and it is about what you were talking about, the historical, where are there third-party accounts that this actually occurred, aside from his people, followers saying it or interpreting it. And it's very informative. It's extremely interesting. About 60% of it washed over my head. But it's so fascinating. First of all, the name of Jesus, they weren't like, hey, Jesus, what's up? By all accounts, his name was Yeshua. Y-E-S-H-U-A.
Right.
I heard it was pronounced. And it just talks about, the prevailing Judaic religion at the time, and what the culture he was born into, and the world as it existed, the Roman Empire, and real concerns that they had to watch out for, and just what shaped the world. And this professor does an astounding job of it. I don't see his name right now, but if you Google that, Historical Jesus, not Google it, iTunes search, you'll find it. 11 parts, about an hour and a half each. Exceptional.
I will definitely check that out.
Yeah.
That sounds very interesting.
Yeah, man.
Also, a song called Personal Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
You should Google.
Is that about the historical doctrines of Jesus?
It is. It is written by a band called Depeche Mode. And
really?
It is.
Depeche Mode?
Yes. Or as someone once told my friend DJ Andy Redrum, friend of the show, Depeche Mode.
Depeche. Oh, that's cute.
Yes.
That's like
Joe Pesci, but this is specifically D. Pesci.
Joe Pesci, oh, Jesus, what do you want? Hey, fuck you, get out of here. Get that fucking pencil. Shoeshine box.
What am I, fucking funny now? Am I funny to you?
Am I a personal clown? This religious talk moves me, nice segue, into talking about a religious controversy that got a TSA agent fired.
Okay.
For her religious beliefs. Not Islam, not Zoroastrianism, but closer to that.
Scientology?
No. Even more frowned upon. Being a self-proclaimed witch.
Okay.
Being a Wiccan. Apparently, I found this on MSNBC's website. Too good to pass up. Whistleblowing witch grounded by the TSA. Now, apparently, imagine somebody that would be in paganism into their middle age. It's a woman. She's overweight and lives with a cat and dog, and her house is in disarray. Not saying that she's a loser or a poor housekeeper.
I think I saw her on Hoarders, actually.
She kind of looks like one of those people.
It's a good show.
But Carol A. Smith seemed really nice in this interview and stuff. And apparently a supervisor had written her up a complaint saying that Carol had followed her home on the freeway and cursed this woman's heater in her car to not work.
Hmm.
Yeah, which is like, really?
You know, having lived in New Orleans for so long, I'm quite familiar with voodoo.
Mm-hmm.
Read a lot of books about it. Read a lot of history about it. Have seen some ritualistic type stuff up close and in person, having attended some events, but not as a participant, as a third-party spectator. I don't know where I was going with that.
Me neither. It sounded interesting until it fell apart.
It did.
Like wet cardboard. Anyway.
I was going to say that having read a lot of books and done a lot of research and stuff like that, I can tell you without a doubt the number one spell that witches are requested to do is to break the heater in my boss's car. That's number one on the list.
It's not little known, man. The druids were doing it long ago.
Not love or wealth
spirit worship
or health.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, can you break my boss's heater? Because she's a real fucking bitch.
Yeah, it's a popular spell, which of course is just absurd. You know, why wouldn't it be? I want my boss to, you know, do a 180 into a semi or something like
that.
And basically she was a top performer there. She was like in the top 10 percentile, top 90 percentile rather, of finding things on scanners. Really had high marks. Like the worst of her write-ups was late one time, forgot a name tag one time, took too long on a break, which is, you know, those are nothing. But she was totally fucking booted from her job, from the TSA, over that. Let's see. She's 49. Where was it? Albany Airport in New York. So religious intolerance, I guess, knows no bounds, even in this so-called free country.
Well, a good friend of mine is from Albany.
I thought you were going to say they were a witch.
No.
A witch?
He might be a Wiccan. But no, my good friend Chris lives in New Orleans now, but he is from Albany. I call him Johnny Tremaine, but I'll have to ask him if there's a lot of a lot of Wiccan type activity in that neck of the woods.
Ask me if he's been through that airport before. Maybe she felt him up.
I'm sure he has. Yeah. I know he has traveled back home on several occasions in the past few years. So we'll see what happens. I'll give him a buzz.
Good. Buzz them up. Facebook them out.
Buzz them up.
So did you hear about the the stand-in that was like bitching about Natalie Portman taking all the the credit for her dance sequences in Black Swan?
No.
No? Well, let me tell you about this.
Please.
Okay, have you seen Black Swan yet?
I have not.
Okay, well, you know basically about it. Natalie Portman yes. is in the ballet. I mean, that's the whole fucking, you know, setting of the film. And this, the stand-in that did the more complicated dance sequences for her now comes out after Oscars have been won and stuff like that, saying Portman only did like 5% of the actual on-screen dancing in
wow.
it.
Wow.
And the director...
Yeah, you know why? She was too busy fucking her dance coach.
I know, yeah, getting knocked up with a little baby swan.
Right.
Or will it be a knuckly duckling? Yeah, and since then, the dude that was banging feathers with her, and I think the director came back and said, yeah, no, Portman did about 85% of the shit in there. I mean, I had seen the film. She is fucking skinny. She is doing a lot of the stuff. You know, I watch a lot of movies. I know the difference between what the actor's actually doing and what a double is doing.
Sure.
Because then I have to know what to jack off to.
Right.
And I mean, it was solid Portman, but I mean, really, person... Really, really ballet person, you know, and their beef is like, oh, I spent 22 years of my life becoming a ballet dancer, and I don't want people to think that an actor can spend a year and a half training and be a great ballerina. Yeah, we don't. They're a fucking actor. They're acting, you yes. know? It's like if The Matrix had come out, and then you hear from the Wire guy, like, well, that's not really Keanu Reeves. It's me and my wires, and I want my wires to be represented.
All right, see, I thought that was pretty understood.
Yeah, you know what right? I mean? Like, yeah, when I buy a ticket, I know this is not a documentary or this is a documentary. Right. I generally know
yeah.
that.
Yeah, Morgan Freeman is not the guy jumping off the building. It is not actually Morgan Freeman
Wait,
doing
which movie?
I don't know. I'm just saying, in general... Just overall, that. Morgan Freeman probably not doing a lot of his own stunts.
Yeah, and this is just, one, it's really pissy of this person to do that. I'm sure they paid you enough money to make it worth your while at the time.
Right.
And what a perfect way to ensure that you never work in film again.
Yes.
Aside from pulling a big stink storm for the sweetheart that won the Oscars. I mean, Natalie Portman, you may have a problem not liking her acting or something like that, but you certainly can't say that she's, you know, a bad person that deserves to be fucking the equivalent of a bag of shit being left on her doorstep on fire so she stomps it out with her little ballet toes.
I agree. Were you ever a stand-in?
Yeah, I was a stand-in.
Do you have any good stand-in stories?
Yeah, I got two decent stand-in stories.
Hit me with them.
I was a stand-in on The Curious Case of Benjamin Buttons.
Really?
Yeah, featuring Brad Pitt.
Wow.
And that other actor, I can't remember his name. He's a British guy. He was in Snatch with Brad Pitt also. And he played Brad Pitt's father in Benjamin Buttons.
Okay.
I was that fellow's stand-in.
Okay.
The guy that played his father. His name is Jason Fleming.
Okay.
Jason Fleming, the actor. I was his stand-in for one day. And I was there, and it was a scene with Brad Pitt. But anyway, Jason Fleming was awesome. He was very approachable, had a good sense of humor. He's like a kid in a candy store, just happy to be making a film. And he had this girl that was just kind of off to the sides that he brought to hang around with him. And at first, I thought it was his daughter in my ignorance, and asked around, and some of the other crew members that had been there longer than I was like, oh, no, that's like some chick he picked up. And I was like, oh, okay. And he called her Hell's Bells, which I thought was cute because he's this Brit in America in New Orleans that picked up some skank at a bar. And right. she's like now hanging out on a movie set directed by David Fincher.
Sure.
And he was a solid guy. And Brad Pitt was being Brad Pitty and being very serious and just like getting the job done. And he would disappear to his trailer. Like, you know, when they break down a camera and set up for the next shot, he would go off to his trailer, which was probably about 2.5 blocks away from the set.
Right.
Just as the Brad Pitt walks. And then they would like spend 10 minutes moving the set, and then they'd be like 15 minutes waiting for him to walk back. So pretty much he must have just like walked and like tapped his trailer and then like walked back.
Sure.
Just to not have to be around other humans.
Right.
Which I guess I can understand. When you get that point of like supernova stardom, it just hurts to be around normal people. They would be BP, BP, meaning that Brad Pitt is back in the vicinity. Mm-hmm. And Jason Fleming would just stay around and talk to his chick. And, so I was his stand-in. He was like, oh yeah, cheers, mate. And I was holding his props for him. And he was, you know, doing a good job of being personable and effortlessly. Brad Pitt was smoked Marlboro Lights, using Nokia phone, because he put it off in a room that we weren't filming in currently, and I was like, oh, what's Brad Pitt stashing in there? And then I took out one of his cigarettes and I licked it. I put it back in. No, I didn't do that. I should have. That would be great. Then the actor that was standing in for Brad Pitt left to go on an audition during this, you know, 10-hour day of filming. So all of a sudden, I was now Brad Pitt's stand-in, right, as well as Jason Fleming's stand-in.
Wow.
So I was like, wow.
Put that on your resume.
Yeah, this is so cool.
For Brad Pitt.
I should be being paid twice, which didn't happen.
Right.
So I did that. In between the takes that they didn't need us for, I kind of got behind David Fincher, who was in his little director chair with his monitors in front of him and his headphones on, and just kind of like looking through people to watch what he was seeing. And he noticed me at one point and kind of like moved his shoulder aside, kind of like, oh, yeah, you want to have a look? And I was like, oh, wow. You know, that's fucking awesome.
That is very cool.
That's not like, who the fuck are you? Get me a coffee. Right. You know? You know, I'm very conscious of not trying to impose myself too much. So, you know, I was like, thanks. Very interested in the process of movie making. And then there was one point where, I was laying down in a bed to be Jason Fleming laying down in a bed. And, I had my iPod with me and, you know, doing a stand in stuff, you can be doing something for about 15 minutes. And I didn't think there was any harm if I had like an earbud in one of my ears as I'm doing this stand in work. Stupid of me, because at one point I hear like, oh, what is that? Is it a wire? I was like, oh, yeah, it's my iPod. They're like, yeah, can you lose that? And I was like, oh, yeah, sorry. I'm a big fucking loser. And I felt like a tremendous loser. But then the cameraman was kind of joking around with me and stuff. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, they're just kind of razzing me. No big deal. And then Jason Fleming got in the bed once I had marked the position for him in the bed. And they were doing the scene. And they did the scene. And it was like, Jason Fleming is dying, you know, and Brad Pitt's like visiting him. He's like, father, you know, you did all you could for me your whole life. I really appreciate it. It's like, no, I was terrible to you. It's okay. I forgive you. All right, cut. And then Jason Fleming like removes the bed covers and he's got a screwdriver in there and he sticks it up to Brad Pitt's neck. He's like, ah, gotcha. I was like, oh my God, dude, who the fuck is this guy? He's just like I said, a kid in a candy store. I was like, that guy's awesome, dude. I wish I could hang out with him.
Right.
So that was that day. I didn't get called back. I don't know why. Probably any number of reasons. Probably the iPod in the ears probably was that one. Another one, I was a stand-in for Final Destination 4 in 3D.
Nice.
For one of the young guys. That this ties in. He kind of looked like if you took the genetic sampling of Kurt Russell and Brad Pitt and made like a super fuck bot.
Okay.
That was this guy. And like had him work out well.
Mm-hmm.
And I was his stand-in, not in good shape, don't really look like him at all.
Right.
I guess I was white, maybe. Right. That was it. And this kid was all cocky and stuff, because, yeah, I'm a star in a movie, and I'm like fucking 20 years old, and I'm like, you little fucking pretty boy.
Right.
You don't know what it's like to do nothing your whole life. And I'm his stand-in, and it wasn't stand-in even for the filming. They were just trying to coordinate the 3D cameras that they were using. The directors were trying to figure out how to do it. So they just had like a bare set with stuff in the foreground and the background. They were just having the actors kind of stand there. Yeah. And they were going into their little 3D tent and checking the footage to see if they were calibrating them right. And I was there, and I was wearing kind of like a tan shirt. And they were like, well, Bill, whatever the guy's name is going to have his shirt off. Let's get that guy to take his shirt off. Talking about me, I'm like, yeah, let's look at Pasty McGee right here. You want to put a fucking Polaroid filter on that like you're in the fucking Alps so you don't blow out your fucking 3D? That's kind of like, I don't think that'll help. I think this fucking shirt I'm wearing is tanner than me.
This asshole's bird chest blew out our $5 million rig.
So you just hear somebody go... mercifully, they said, like, no, the shirt you have on is fine enough. Didn't get called back on that one either to continue standing in.
Well, I was a stand-in one time for a movie called Freshman Orientation. It was very, you know, National Lampoon, college sex romp kind of movie.
Mm-hmm.
Directed by Ryan Shiraki, who was a former writer for SNL. And
I auditioned for that film.
Really?
Yeah. And I'll tell that in a second. Go on, please.
Yeah, that was the movie in which I played Bad Dancer.
Oh, God.
Yes.
It's your dream role, baby.
Right? That was the...
Typecasting.
Right? That was the Bad Dancer role. But in addition to my role as Bad Dancer mm-hmm. in that movie, I was a stand-in for one of the leads. Guy by the name of Bryce Johnson has been in a bunch of stuff. You know, Nip Tuck and did the... You know, a lot of those crappy, you know... Dawson's Creek, Gilmore Girls kind of crap.
Yeah, probably didn't get paid much at all.
Right, that kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I was a stand-in for him for like 2 weeks.
Wow, okay? Some good cheddar.
Yeah, yeah, it was nice. And anyway, the funny story is there was a scene in the movie where he is receiving fellatio.
No. Nice.
And by this point, you know, we had been shooting for like a week and a half. So all the stand-ins for all the lead roles
uh-huh.
were
pretty well integrated.
Pretty yeah. well integrated. We knew each other. We would laugh, you know, have a good time. And so the stand-in for the female character and I... We didn't know because as a stand-in, you don't see the script.
No.
You yes. just go and...
You're a marionette.
Yeah. And yeah. they say, okay, stand over there and put your arm up like you're waving at someone. And you go stand over there and you put your arm up like you're waving at someone and you stand there for 45 minutes or an hour while they set the lights mm-hmm. and get the cameras set and all that good stuff. And then they kick you off set and then they bring in the real actors. And the real actors walk up, and since they're your same height and build and all that stuff, they don't have to readjust anything typically, and they shoot. And the real actors, as you said earlier, go back to their trailer and fucking play ping pong, and then the stand-ins go to the next shot.
Mm.
Well, anyway, so the scene is this guy leaning up against a pool table, and the girl's going down on him. So... For 45 minutes, okay, I'm laying up against this, sitting on the edge wow. of this pool table, fully clothed, of course, but this poor girl, you know, who's the stand-in who, you know, thought, oh, this is, you know, this is my
big break.
This is my big break. You know, poor girl is like 19, you know, I'd never done anything. This was her first movie, you know, mm-hmm. so she's all giddy and happy. And, you know, they're like, okay, go put your head in this dude's crotch. You know, and I mean, she, you know, she stayed like a foot away, but she was, you know, still on her knees in front
of me. In your crotchal region. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And
your dick radar had to pick her up just
right.
biologically.
Well, well, you know, I was making jokes and keeping it real light. And of yeah. course, the, you know, the guys on the crew were having a field day, you know, just a few more minutes.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, poor girl, man. Poor girl.
That's awesome. Dude, you didn't give anybody your camera and be like, hey, take a picture.
No. It was a fun time though, man. That was 2 good weeks and I got paid really well. And, yeah, old dude was a fucking douche nozzle, but
really?
He was.
One thing about Benjamin Button's standing in, I don't want to forget, is that I wanted to have some kind of connection with Brad Pitt. Because like the supernova he is, the gravity that he produces is attractive, and you cannot deny it. And there was one part where one point where I was walking back on the set and went up the steps, and I noticed as I was entering the house set that Brad Pitt was, you know, maybe about 10 feet behind me and coming the same way. And I opened the door and I held the door open for Brad Pitt.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, this will be a nice gesture. But then I realized in between, oh, this is a nice gesture, that he's like slowing his pacing down of walking. Like he doesn't want to have me there holding the door open.
Interesting.
But I stay there.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm
no.
I'm like, fuck you. You just take your fancy little ass, walk through, maybe give me a nod, huh? Maybe be like, oh, hey, guy, I acknowledge your existence. No, there is that little battle of wills right there. Not making eye contact. Man, fuck you, Brad Pitt.
Right.
Maybe that's... I don't know why I wasn't called back.
Mm.
Anyway, weird things.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, stand in. Good money.
Yeah, decent money. Dicey business.
Yeah, dicey business. Good way to get started in the world of...
It's good to, get acclimated to some of the insanity that goes on.
Sure. Yeah. And like you said, you
don't piss off the star talent, I guess.
Right. Stand behind the director and, looking at the monitors and stuff. It's a good time.
Oh, one more thing. It was a long day. The hair and makeup person was like this old Jewy woman that was talking on her fucking phone all the time.
Right.
Like while they were filming, talking on it. And I don't know who she knew or how she got there.
Right.
Because every now and then David Fincher would just kind of turn around and like look at her and then turn back around to his monitors. And I was like, oh, dude, somebody's going to fucking snap down on her. But nobody ever did.
Wow.
And at one point, I was just like, shh, making a movie.
It's probably like the executive producer's sister or something.
Or Fincher's mom or something. I don't know.
Right.
We're going to get off at about... in about four hours or so. Yeah. No, I had the shrimp today. The shrimp. It was cold. Yeah, it was cold. I was like, oh my God, lady, really?
That's good stuff, man.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
It was a carnival.
Well, a couple of interesting bits of science news this week. I had heard Michio Kaku a few weeks ago talk about this, and I wanted to bring it up then. It just never did. Scientists in Japan are now figuring out how to take pictures, still pictures, from your dreams. Scientists have isolated the part of the brain that deals with dreams and have found a way to hook up probes or monitors that will interpret... that will visually interpret brain waves. So as you're encountering this dream, your brain waves are pulsating these certain pulses, and scientists have figured out they've only got one or two pixels so far of an image.
Yeah.
But once they figure out how to expand that at an infinite rate, then they can get still frame photos, essentially, of your dreams.
Yeah, but if they get one 2 pixels, I mean, what? Does this look like part of your dream? I mean, that's like...
I'm not a scientist. I'm just telling you that they are...
That's awesome. That's like fucking catnip for me, dude. That's like Dreamscape and Keanu Reeves' next movie needs to be this.
Yeah, but I started thinking about it, as I often do with science-related news items. I get off in my daydream kind of world and start pondering these things and think about how much trouble that's going to be. I mean, as far as like, if you have a dirty dream, not only...
Oh, honey, I hooked you up to the dream scanner last night.
And, I mean,
who the fuck is this?
I'm saying if you have a dirty dream and you can print a picture out from it, okay? In my head, I'm banging Angelina Jolie.
Mm-hmm.
And then I print out a picture of me banging Angelina Jolie.
Mm-hmm.
And then I send it to...
It's better than Photoshop.
The Globe or, the Sun or the National Enquirer and say, guess what, everybody? Banged Angelina Jolie.
Wow.
Yeah. So what's going to be the line?
Well, there is no line, baby.
Right?
Bring it on.
That's the weird thing is like, does humanity have a responsibility as far as technology goes? That's a debate we could have 5 shows on.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting question to throw out there.
Well, I mean, we can already do that. I mean, you got a talented enough, 3D crew or Photoshop crew.
Yeah, but it's not the same. I mean, because if your dreams are very, very vivid, and as you know, video is merely a series of photographs.
Mm-hmm. Moving pictures, yeah.
Right. So if you have one still frame, you could get 2. And you could get 24 per second.
Right.
And you could play them.
Mm-hmm.
So then not only do you have a still frame, But you have a video of you banging Angelina Jolie.
Well, what's your concern? That people are going to believe that you fucked Angelina Jolie?
No. The concern is, like...
I'd call that a benefit. That somebody's going to use that for ill?
Yeah. I mean, you know, what if the perv that lives next door to you mm-hmm. has...
You know that guy?
No, but I can imagine. You know, has a dirty dream about your daughter.
Uh-huh.
And then now, because he bought this fucking $200,000 machine from Japan
uh-huh.
in 5 years or 10 years or whatever mm-hmm. it's going to be, now he has a video
mm-hmm.
of him doing terrible things to your daughter.
Yeah, but like, I mean, is he going to keep it? Is he going to share it with people? Or
well, that's the line I'm talking about.
Right. Well, I mean, like, you know, he can get on MS Paint and, you know, make a little pixel drawing of him fucking my daughter, too. I can't stop him right now. Or if he's really talented at Photoshop and 3D Studio Max, he can do it.
Sure.
It looks like it happened.
Sure, but what I'm saying is...
You better fucking pay me this time, though.
Is there a line? You know what I mean? Is there a line where we say, okay, technology's great and we're accomplishing a lot, but we can't let this particular aspect of technology
that's the moral
go
question
any further?
That we can have in the Keanu Reeves movie that we make about this topic. Like, when is too much technology...
Whoa.
Too much.
Whoa.
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 Dream whoa. The movie. Yeah. No, I love... Bring it on. I say open the floodgates, baby.
You say do it to it.
Yeah.
Pedal to the metal.
Yeah, man. I can... Fuck. Give me 10 minutes. I can find the most deplorable thing that I... In humanity online.
That's true.
You know? What's one more fucking drop in the well? We gotta fucking make this palace right before Satan comes back to rule.
And, anyway, the other interesting scientific thing I saw this week, last night's Daily Show had a guest on named Miguel Nicolelis, and what he's written a book, and it's essentially about some of the same things, more physics related and whatnot, but he's talking about how technology is now, soon we will be able to move things or control robots
mm-hmm.
Using only our brains, using no vocal input or no, you know,
hands
computer
on.
or hand control.
Physical
or,
input.
Right. Well, just because scientists, in the same way that they've analyzed brain waves for the dream sequence mm-hmm. and dream recording, they can analyze brain waves as to what you are wanting your body to do.
Right, kind of like programming hotkeys on your computer.
Sure, and what this means is, or the first application of it, will be for paralyzed people, like quadriplegics.
Mm-hmm.
They basically sit in this, and there was a picture of it, but they basically sit in this little contraption that looks like a transformer kind of robot thing. You basically just put your torso in the middle of this thing and tie him in, yes. And he's got two arms and two legs, and then
it's like aliens,
right? Exactly, that's exactly what it is. And then
get away from her, you bitch.
You know, they think, okay, I would like to walk to the refrigerator right now and open it up and get a Coke out, and
dude,
their brain goes. And then they can drink the Coke.
Oh, man. What happens when Mickey Rourke's hacker Russian gets in control of those things? And you have a bunch of quadriplegics and transformers running around opening other people's Diet Cokes. What the hell are you doing in my house? I can't control it! Damn it, I was saving that! I'm sorry. I don't even want to drink this right now.
Like the Kool-Aid man just crashing through your wall.
That's another one of those robot paraplegics.
You got any Kool-Aid?
Oh, no! yes, make it happen.
No, it's too great.
That's brilliant.
Oh, man.
They kind of got stuff like that already, though, with quadriplegics. I thought you were going to say they're going to... And I think it goes from, like, handicapped people, and then the next step, once it's proven, is into military use.
Sure.
Which is sad.
Well,
but
I'm sure military use is already going on.
Right, but that's...
I'm sure most of this private, you know, private industry, private enterprise, technological advances,
mm-hmm.
basically just offshoots of government projects.
Right.
I mean, and that's not me being a conspiracy theorist. You look back over the last 50 years, and most of our technologies, the military had it before it was released.
Well, it's even in the funding.
Sure.
Lies, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, especially the funding.
To some limited expense, that's what NASA used to be great for, but they were like, hey, we can have advances without actually accomplishing things aside from, you know, conquering countries or helping, you know, control countries.
Sure, because, I mean, you're thinking about the great innovative...
Tang?
Companies, mm-hmm. You know. I mean, DuPont, BASF, GE, all these companies are essentially government-funded.
Oh, yeah. I mean... So, a large degree, some of them, like, their entire operating budget.
Right, and you're not talking... And we're not even talking about the government entities, you know, the NASA's, the, you know, CIA.
No, it's more efficient to have a private company do it chasing after a profit than try to do it in some bureaucratic establishment.
Sure.
Which is kind of a shame, but kind of good. It's a shame because, yeah, military and, you know, probably it's going to be killing a lot of people. But good because you know they're really going to be chasing the effectiveness of it. And then once it bleeds into the private sector and then people start making it for home use and stuff like that is when we get to benefit from it, which is interesting, you know.
Sure.
It's like nuclear power, you know, wipes out, good portion of Japan, and then we use it for relatively clean burning fuel until it wipes out half of Japan.
Right. Speaking of the dream situation, have you ever been on the nicotine patch?
Yeah, I've heard about that.
You have or you have not?
I have, but okay. And I have had some messed up dreams with the nicotine
dude,
patch.
I'm
on.
Telling you, when I was on the patch, I have never in my life had such vivid, crazy, fucked up dreams as I did when I was on the nicotine patch.
I had some crazy, fucked up, vivid dreams. Not as frequently as I wish I would, honestly.
Right.
Some of them are just like claw your teeth out scary, fear for your soul.
Right.
But some of them are the most beautiful, wonderful things ever.
Yeah.
And I've had that before. That was a long time ago, though. I might, buy a pack of nicotine patches and try it out again.
I mean,
the fuck of it.
So I can remember, like, even years later, I can remember how vivid, you know, these dreams were, and just haunting.
Yeah.
I mean? And not necessarily nightmares. I mean, I think one night I dreamed that my girlfriend at the time was cheating on me, and it was just so vivid and just heart-wrenching and just, like, sad, you know?
You
wake up and you're just like, oh my God, what in the world is this shit doing to me?
Yeah.
Let me go have a cigarette.
Yeah, right?
Let me take this crazy fucking patch off and go smoke a cigarette. Anyway, so what else you got?
That's it, man. I mean, the last thing I had was some fucking UFO lights seen over Colorado, reported by multiple people, which is interesting. Red lights showing out a triangular shape, you know, which is quite common among the community of UFO sightings.
We'll have to ask Teresa about it. She lives in Colorado. We can
really?
We can also ask my friend Heath about it.
Lafayette, Colorado. The first thought I had was like, oh, cool. Oh, great. Like, multiple people saw it. That adds some validity to it.
Sure.
And then the second thing I thought is, why doesn't anybody seem to have a fucking night vision filter when this shit is happening?
Right.
I mean, come on. My fucking phone has night vision on it. It does, like, this fake X-ray vision in Predator 2. It's like, oh, that thing's there. Oh, it's there for more than a minute. Let me go into the settings and put on the fucking green night vision shit. And so, I mean, fuck, that pisses me off. I'm like, oh, there's three lights. Oh, well, it could be like the nose and the landing lights. But in here, you know, you have somebody saying like, well, you know, if there's an advanced alien technology, would they really need fucking lights on their craft? And I kind of feel that too.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, would they do something so like, well, fuck you if you can see me? I mean, would they take that attitude? Like, yeah, so what? I'm a fucking extraterrestrial craft. Deal with it.
Right.
Or would they take some precautions to hide themselves, you know, from obfuscate, from our detection? But unless like these sightings are part of some greater plan. Like, oh, let's let them get used to us. Right. You know, let them know that we're there a little bit at a time before we come in and we start, you know, corralling and eating them. So yeah, aliens.
Well, good deal. And let's have we told the proletariat about the star meter section?
No, we haven't. You mentioned it last time and being off air.
Okay, explain to the proletariat while I...
Folks, there's this website known as IMDb. It is the Internet Movie Database. You can type up any movie, any actor, any producer, any writer, and it will give you their IMDb profile, headshots if available, resumes available, and all the productions they've been in. It will also give you a star meter, letting you know, based on whatever algorithm they cook up, the actor or movies or director or writer's popularity for that particular week. And from week to week, it'll say up X percent or down X percent. And Jonathan said, hey, wouldn't it be great, since we're both on IMDb, to check out our listings from week to week.
And we're doing this completely tongue-in-cheek. As those people that have listened to the show for a while know, we are completely realistic about where we stand on the entertainment industry totem pole, which is beneath the totem pole.
Yeah, like somewhere between the dirt and the magma.
Right. And as the lava flows, we are somewhere in that area beneath the totem pole. So in no way are we saying, we're big stars or anything. We're doing this because it's funny that either one of us even have a star meter to associate
our awesomeness.
Right. Either one of us with being a star is very funny. And we both think it's funny that our star meters can rise and fall in great degrees based on us doing absolutely nothing.
Yeah, and I like what it says. It's like, this star meter is this percent this week. Want to know how it works? Sign up for IMDb Pro and give us $50 a year or whatever. And we're both too cheap and poor to do that.
That's true.
We should maybe go halfsies on one account so we could see it and stuff like that. It might not be so bad for our careers. Right. And so then we could know, you know, the way that they divine this. So give us our marks, man.
Okay, this week, Ryan Reinecke's star meter is down 53%. Your stock has dropped 53% this week.
Where are my shares? Fucking Libya?
Right. I don't know if something happened in one of the movies you've been in.
I got a movie that's making like the circuit right now of like festivals and stuff. Flood Streets, a little film out of New Orleans.
Right.
So I would think if anything, it'd be up. But down 53. Shit. I must have fucked up something.
Yeah, I don't know, man. You got me. And of course, this week, my star meter is, let's see, up 76%. I am up 76%. I'm up this week.
And not only are you up, but you're up at a greater percentage than I'm down.
That's true.
And wait. What's your rank? Does it have like a number? Like, this guy is number 8,844.
It does not.
Oh, fuck. It used to have that.
It does say I'm a Pisces, though. And my alternate name is Jonathan Bell. As opposed to Jonathan Watts Bell, who the director of the first crappy B-horror movie I ever did suggested I go by Jonathan Watts Bell. So now I am forever enshrined in IMDb as Jonathan Watts Bell, as opposed to my real name.
Is your middle name Jonathan Watts Bell? I mean, is your middle name Watts?
It is.
Well, aren't there a lot of Jonathan Bells out there? I mean, that seems like a fairly common...
There are, but it's not like anybody searching for me is going to be like, oh, Jonathan Watts Bell. Anyway, so we'll check back next week. I don't know why I'm up this week. I guess if I had to guess, I'd say the Gene Simmons episode probably replayed at some point this week in the middle of the night.
While, though.
Yeah, but I mean, fuck, why else would I be up 76%? I haven't done anything.
Christ if I know.
Right?
I mean, if anything, we should both be up doing this podcast.
Right?
There are tens of fans out there.
Right?
Yeah.
Or both be down because we haven't had any TV or film work in ages and ages.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's pretty much all I had. You nerding on anything this week?
No. Nope. No. No nerding going on, really.
Yeah, I'm just nerding on the video I'm trying to finish up for a friend of the show, Jessie Merriweather, her...
Give you a little bit of that in a bit.
Yeah, her Love Leaks comedy video series.
Yeah, if you YouTube Love Leaks, you'll be able to find it.
Yep, she's starting a web series. I will be contributing my video this week to her, so hopefully we're going to be able to finish the editing for that after tonight's show, and we'll be in business. But that's it for me.
All right, y'all. Enjoy. Mr. Bell, enjoy your time in Vegas.
I will.
Please, folks. Again, if you email us, we'll get you some free tickets to his show. And if you're in the Vegas area, check him out at the Improv at Harrah's on the Strip.
That's it. April 5th through 10th. Two shows a night. Be there.
All right, man. Do it to it.
All right.
And bring me back some girly cards.
I will bring you back some girly cards.
All right, folks. We'll keep you on the... We'll catch you on the flip side, and we'll keep you to our hearts.
NerdAristocracy.com. Tell your friends, Facebook, iTunes, all that good stuff. Email us, mail at NerdAristocracy.com. But most importantly, hit us up at NerdAristocracy.com. Listen to past episodes. Tell your friends about us. We love you. We care for you. And we want to make sweet, passionate love to each and every one of you.
Word and nerd out.
Alex Gardner has a unique talent, and even he doesn't know what it can do.
No one has ever done it before. No one has even conceived of doing it before.
You're going into another person's dream. You might have to see that and believe it.
He is about to enter a world that no one has ever seen before. The world of your dreams.
There's somebody in my dreams.
Who?
An awful, ugly monster.
It's a dream, Alex!
Dennis Quaid, Kate Capshaw, Dreamscape. When you close your eyes, the adventure begins.
Please be advised that the following sectors are off limits to civilian drone use. B-41, B-42, C-17. Any non-authorized androids in these sectors will be destroyed. Thank you for your cooperation.